From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, September 13th, 2017. And on this day, police and others in eastern Maine say they're worried that Verizon's decision to end wireless service to many there could put people in danger. And should insurers be required to pay for medical marijuana as part of workers' comp? Those stories ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Law enforcement agencies in eastern Maine are criticizing that decision by Verizon Wireless to terminate cell service due to what they say is excessive cost. Police say the company's decision will have an adverse impact on their work and on the ability of residents to call 911. Verizon officials remain tight-lipped today regarding the actual number of dropped customers, which some sources say could be as many as 2,000. A.J. Higgins has more.
3 years ago, residents of Washington and eastern Hancock counties threw their support behind an effort to expand cell phone service throughout the region with more than a dozen new towers along Routes 1 and 9. Winter Harbor Police Chief Danny Mitchell says residents came to rely on that service until Verizon Wireless sent out notices informing many subscribers that they were terminating their contracts. Mitchell says it's hard for many locals to understand why they can't make calls from Scudic Point while visiting Verizon customers can still connect to the network.
So, they got to come out their door every day, look at a cell phone tower, and say, hey, I can't connect to that because Verizon won't let me.
And Mitchell says the loss of service could have a huge impact on law enforcement activities.
A lot of our calls come in via 911. With less of a signal, your geographic location, your positioning becomes larger and larger.
In neighboring Washington County, Sheriff Barry Curtis says he and his operational staff are still attempting to gauge the full consequences of Verizon's decision that he says could adversely impact the department's response time. He's reaching out to his county commissioners for guidance in a situation that he says is setting the county back several years.
It's kind of difficult sitting in this seat, as far as being the sheriff here. I'm in contact with the commissioners. I'm hoping that, they're going to be stepping up to the plate here and assisting us in this too, filing their complaints because, we're going to need all the help we can get here.
There has to be some answers. I don't understand how they could do that to these people.
Senator Joyce Maker is a callous Republican who has fielded a lot of calls from constituents. Maker hasn't said whether she would support a legislative response to the Verizon decision and, like most members of the Washington County delegation, is still trying to find out from Verizon exactly what they've done, how many people are affected, and why they terminated their advertised service plans. Maine Public Advocate Barry Hobbins also has a number of questions for Verizon.
Because it's not cost-effective for them, now they're going to pull the plug and pull the plug on 2,000 customers, then it becomes an issue.
Verizon officials have thus far declined to be interviewed and have instead issued emails saying the actual number of dropped customers is, quote, a fraction of the 2,000 figure cited by Hobbins. David Weissman, public relations manager for Verizon's Northeast Market, says Verizon will continue to utilize the cell tower network in Downeast Maine to provide additional coverage for their customers. He says that the coverage area is not changing and that the company is simply disconnecting a small number of customers whose primary data usage is outside of the Verizon service area. Verizon has given dropped customers until October 17th to find new cell phone service providers, after which they will not be able to retain their current telephone numbers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And this is Maine Public Radio. The co-chair of Maine's Health and Human Services Committee says the state has provided a vague and unsatisfactory response to a federal audit about its failure to adequately protect people with developmental disabilities. Democratic Representative Patty Hymanson says she is concerned about whether Maine's Department of Health and Human Services is resolving issues identified in the audit released this summer. Patty White has more.
When Representative Hymanson, along with Health and Human Services Committee co-chair, Republican Senator Eric Brakey, sent a letter to DHHS in August, she was hoping she'd get answers. Instead, she says, the responses fell short.
When I read them, I am full of more questions.
The lawmakers asked DHHS why a federal audit found that Maine does not properly report or investigate critical incidents involving people with developmental disabilities in community care settings and how the department is resolving those issues. Hymanson says she's glad to see DHHS has made a few corrective actions, such as holding regular meetings to review critical incidents and identify trends. But in many of the responses, she says, DHHS shifted blame to other agencies or cited its obligations without explaining how it plans to adequately protect people with developmental disabilities going forward.
I still don't have in my head, based on these answers, what the remediation plan is.
The Office of the Inspector General Audit, released this summer, found that over a 2.5-year period from 2013 to 2015, DHHS failed to report 95% of incidences of suspected abuse or neglect. It also failed to investigate 133 deaths during that time frame, 9 of which were deemed as suspicious, unexplained, or untimely. In one case, a resident drowned in a bathtub.
These are people, these are adults who cannot do things for themselves. So they have to have other people doing things.
That's why oversight, Hymanson says, is so important. She says she'll work with Republican State Senator Eric Brakey and other members of their committee to elicit specific information from DHHS about steps it's taking to rectify issues and measure improvements. Preferably, Hymanson says, that will be learned in the course of a hearing and not an exchange of letters. Neither Brakey nor DHHS have responded to requests for comment. In previous responses to the audit, Acting Commissioner Ricker Hamilton has said the findings were during a time of transition within the department and that many of the issues identified have been addressed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And finally today, the Maine Supreme Court is considering a first-of-its-kind case in Maine, whether an employer or insurer should be forced to pay for an injured worker's medical marijuana. Gayton Borgoyne says it's the only treatment that relieves his chronic pain. An administrative law judge took his side in the case, but Borgoyne's employer appealed. As Susan Sharon reports, at issue is whether medical marijuana is a reasonable and proper form of treatment.
Gayton Borgoyne's pain began in 1989 when he injured his back while lifting a heavy door at what was then Fraser Paper. He was eventually awarded total incapacity benefits. After years of consulting pain specialists, visiting clinics around the country, and suffering what his attorney says were significant side effects from multiple powerful painkillers, Borgoyne finally found something that eased his symptoms, medical marijuana. But his former employer, now Twin Rivers Paper Company, doesn't want to pay for it.
This is not a case about making judgment over whether someone should or should not use marijuana as a matter of personal choice.
Anne Marie Story is an attorney for Twin Rivers who told the Maine Supreme Court her client shouldn't be ordered to reimburse Borgoyne for his medical marijuana as long as it's classified as a Schedule I drug under the Federal Controlled Substances Act.
As such, it's defined as having no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse.
Story pointed to the opinion of an independent medical evaluator hired by the Maine Workers' Compensation Board to review the case. He noted that voter authorization of the use of medical marijuana in states like Maine does not establish an accepted medical treatment under federal law. Story says there's also a lack of evidence that medical marijuana is safe and effective. For these and other reasons, the evaluator concluded that Borgoyne's medicine was not a reasonable and proper form of treatment under the Maine Workers' Compensation Act. But Chief Justice Lee Softly pressed Story on that point.
Are we not, given the facts that you have just presented, also looking at the medical community's extraordinary concern about opioids and the addictions that have followed opioids?
Well, I think that goes back to the fact that the marijuana is still classified as a Schedule I drug, and so obviously that is one primary concern.
That's because the big drug companies...
From his seat on the bench, Justice Donald Alexander noted that big drug companies that manufacture opioids like oxycodone have successfully lobbied Congress to keep the status quo, even though Alexander says marijuana is a less dangerous drug.
In this case, the facts pretty well demonstrate that It's a valuable alternative for this man who otherwise has, you know, severe reactions to taking the opioid narcotic drugs.
To that point, attorney Norman Trask, who represents Burgoyne, says his client was evaluated at the Mayo Clinic, where doctors determined he developed a narcotic dependence. Trask says Burgoyne nearly died from using opioids in ever-increasing doses to ease his pain. But Justice Ellen Gorman asked Trask to explain why his client's treatment should be reimbursed if there's no determination in Maine law that it has a medical use.
How can you then say that as a matter of law it could be deemed medically reasonable?
Because we have medical practitioners recommending and, if not prescribing per se, certifying that somebody is a suitable candidate for this medication based on DHHS criteria.
The Maine Department of Health and Human Service criteria includes conditions such as chronic pain and allows medical marijuana to be used to treat it. Story says her client remains concerned that covering the cost of the drug is a violation of federal law, for which the company could be prosecuted. But when asked whether she knew of any cases anywhere in the country where a provider or an insurance company has been prosecuted for reimbursing or recommending medical marijuana as a treatment, Story said she did not. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.